Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're live on Blog Talk Radio for the Vikings Unlimited Combat Sports Show. This is Rabble Arousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, Tony Pennegal.
We have a special guest for us tonight. He's going to introduce himself. What's your name? What's your name? What?
Nice.
That's Bart.
What's his name?
Bart. B-A-R-T. Barking for his dinner plate.
Nice.
It's his first appearance on the show.
Yeah, my mutt has made many appearances. He gets all fired up.
Yeah, Vinny, he's a good dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
Take care of me.
He knows his name. That's his one trick. That's his name. But, yep, we got quite the boxing show for you tonight, Tony.
Sweet.
Some real big reality show called White Collar Brawler. These two guys, Nate and Kai, and they left their jobs to make a web series about becoming amateur boxers. And in December, they're going to step in the ring to fight for a fully sanctioned match in San Francisco. And then also, we've got an interview for the 9:15 slot with Michelangelo Perez, lightweight boxer, scheduled for a bout in New Jersey on November 6th. And he's 9-0-1, so should be a pretty interesting guy to talk to. He's a lightweight. Got some power, too. He's got four knockouts.
Well, now you say, is that a pre-taped interview, or is he live?
No, they're both live. Everybody's live.
Oh, okay. For a second, I thought you said it was like a pre-tape. I was like, I get confused.
Yeah, we're gonna be pretty jammed up with talking to people the whole tonight. We're gonna start about 8:15, I think, with the reality show guys here, the web series. So, did you watch any boxing over the weekend?
I don't even remember last weekend. How does that sound? Actually, Actually, last weekend, I didn't really do much anything. I got really sick on Saturday, so that wasn't a good thing. I was going to go out, and then that didn't happen. So I ended up, like, staying in and just resting because I really was really into the weather. Mm-hmm. We've got a big weekend coming up here, so, you know, you got to be well for it.
Big weekend?
Yeah.
What weekend?
You know, somebody's birthday?
That's your birthday coming up?
No, my birthday was 2 weeks ago. Isn't it your birthday coming up?
Yeah, October 1st, tomorrow.
Yeah, happy birthday, old man.
Good Friday. Thank you.
Yeah, mine was up 2.5 weeks ago. It was not a good day. It was not a good day. I was in a bad mood.
Uh-oh. I forgot about it?
Yeah. What?
I forgot your birthday?
No, I was in a bad mood because people at work, I work in a business where people annoy me, especially on Mondays. This was a Monday. The Eagles had lost the home opener, so I was in a bad mood about that. And then someone was like, well, everyone goes, you should have said something was your birthday. Nobody knew. I said, we better make the customers not annoy anymore. I said, it could have been my birthday. It could have been my wedding day. It could have been my 800th anniversary of God knows what. Customers are still going to piss me off. And they did not disappoint.
Well, my ankle was healing and I had my first real full workout in the bag today, so maybe I might end up hugging one of these guys we talked to tonight.
Yeah, I've been working out a little bit here and there now that I got back to a normal, a somewhat normal, Monday night I got stuck there till after 7 o'clock and I was kind of pissed off. And tonight I didn't get to work out because you figure I didn't get home until 6:45. I'm not going to be able to eat dinner, squeeze a workout in, and run out to the one local supermarket and do that all in an hour and 15 minutes. I'm good. I'm not that good.
Come on, man. If you maybe had a car like that movie Cobra, you could drive
backwards. That movie was badass. I was watching that a few months ago. I think that was one of Sly's finer performances.
Yeah, it was a better character, I think, than any of those other ones.
It was a good character. And he's basically banging Ivan Drago's wife in it, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that was one of her best roles, Ivan Drago's
wife. It was. I liked her better in that role than I did Drago's wife. Drago's wife, her hair was too short, and, you know, she was too, like, icy.
Yeah.
She didn't have much of a personality.
She was.
That's what matters in life, you know?
But anyway, we have some good guests on tonight. They get this good reality show. The UFC had a huge event, sort of, last weekend, so we'll talk about that.
By the way, where are my congratulations?
Congratulations, you picked the main event?
No, my congratulations on my baseball team making it to the playoffs.
Oh, cut it out.
Why am I cutting it out? I'm happy.
The Phillies. I don't even want to talk about baseball.
Why not?
The Red Sox have been officially eliminated.
Yeah, your point. So you can root for the Phillies now.
All right. Congratulations.
There'll be no conflict of interest on the show when the Phillies are in the World Series. Because they won't be playing the Red Sox, so you won't be rooting against me.
I drank a bottle of La Fin du Monde, two bottles of La Fin du Monde the other night, in their honor. How about that?
Fight, Rosal Alvarez really made a name for himself by knocking basically out cold iron-chinned Carlos Baldomir. Now, Alvarez in the sixth round hit Baldomir with about a dozen flush shots where the first one would have knocked out pretty much any viable contender. And Baldomir stood up to about a dozen before he finally went down from, a left hook that could have knocked over an elephant.
Thanks. No, you got cut off at the beginning there. Who was Baldemir fighting?
Oh, it's just, well, I was saying, I was last week, and they showed on HBO Latino the replay from the previous week, Sergio Mora, Shane Mosley fight card. But like I said, I didn't stick around to watch that one, but I did watch the Saul Alvarez versus Carlos Baldemir fight, and it was pretty impressive. Alvarez, you know, he's an up-and-coming prospect. He knocked out the Iron Chin Baldemir, who I never thought anybody would knock out. And, I mean, Alvarez at one point hit him with about a dozen flush shots that, you know, any of them would have knocked over an elephant. And Baldemir walked through most of them to the final left hook, and that was just, I mean, oh, it was destructive. I mean, to put Baldemir down, you know it had to be destructive.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. We keep getting disconnected.
How's the weather up where you are tonight?
It's raining.
Pouring?
You know, it was really kind of breezy more than anything in the afternoon.
We've been having some, you know, pretty rough periods of rain today. I think it was a little bit worse, you know, more to the south.
Right.
I was talking to the office in Virginia today, and they're like, can you send us paperwork now? We might be closing early. I'm like, closing early for what? Like, oh, we're having horrible torrential downpours here, a couple tornado watches. I was like, tornado watches? I'm right here in Philadelphia. What's your problem? Watching me? Yeah.
Is there a warrant out for a tornado in Seneca?
You know, I mean, I didn't know I was in Virginia today, but apparently I was.
Uh-oh.
Fighting people around.
Wow. Well, we got the UFC to talk about. We're going to probably have to breach that subject a little bit later. White crawler. I'm thinking fishing. Yeah, I'm doing so much fishing. Nightcrawler is on my mind. The white collar brawler of the show, white collar brawler. And it's Nate and Kai. I'm going to get them on the phone. Hopefully that's not them that just left me a message. I'm getting anxious.
Were they sending you a message?
I think so. I'm not sure. So I got the email up here. But it's good timing as far as I'm concerned for somebody to be doing a show on amateur boxing. You know, boxing does need that spotlight on the up-and-comers and whoever these guys can be classified as. I haven't got much specifics on them, unfortunately. We're going to have to get it out of them, but I know how old they are and why they're doing this and how they plan to do this whole show. One more second. Any quick hit boxing news, Tony? Besides Ricky Hatton getting his boxing license taken away?
I'm trying to think, man. We got anything big coming up? Nothing I can think of off the top of my head. My head's pretty empty today.
Uh-oh. You're the guy that's going to ask all the questions. You don't even talk to me. It's all boxing.
You just let me get on there and get going. You know how I improvise.
All right. Well, basically, these two guys, it's a documentary web series that follows two office workers who quit their jobs to become amateur boxers. And they are going to fight a fully sanctioned fight against local amateur fighters. And we'll get that at the end of the show. Episodes will be released exclusively online at whitecollarbrawler.com on Tuesdays and Fridays with up-to-the-minute updates on Facebook and Twitter. So maybe this type of thing will become a phenomenon, and we can do our own. Tony and Rich, fight to the death. Finally. That's what we'll call it. No, they already did that. Still there?
I'm still here. I was just looking at something. I see some big news.
Silence is scaring me.
One channel this weekend, all weekend, they're having a Dukes of Hazzard marathon.
Oh, boy.
That's exciting.
Old school Dukes of Hazzard. Can't beat it. I know that they have a character named Cooter. Cooter! All right. What do you guys?
Great education show.
Daisy Dukes.
Well, that was very educational, too.
We've got some Ring Girl stuff going on soon, too. We're going to update that. On the... We'll get up there for some pictures.
Hi, your viewers, Nate. Please leave a message.
Oh, no. Nate, this is Rich. Rabble-rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. We're supposed to be talking to you now. Favorite phone if you're there. We'll call back in 5 minutes, I guess. All right, that's not good.
I'm sorry, I'm coughing and laughing at the same time.
Yeah,
well,
hey.
Big news.
Big news. What's the big news?
News. We don't, I mean, this is obviously not definite yet, but a very big but, and I like big buts and I cannot lie, so it can be high, but I might actually need a Thursday off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The Iron Man streak.
The Iron Man streak could be ending.
That's fine.
Perfect. Not definite yet. It would be Thursday the 28th.
Wow, that's an advance.
Well, yeah, and the reasoning is, last year, we were in the process of when we were pre-recording our shows.
Yeah.
So that Thursday night was a World Series game. We did our show at like 6 o'clock. I wasn't working, so it wasn't a problem. The year before, I remember I tried to do the show while decorating for a Halloween party and watching the World Series game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, I was not at my best.
Wow. We have been getting a lot of requests for interviews. Like, people want us to do.
I saw, you know, you sent me today. I actually read that when I was when I got home from work. I was like, oh shit! I remember talking to Mark TNT Tucker before. I was like, okay, I'm like, that'd be pretty cool.
That fight, his fight has been scratched, so we're not going to be interviewing him just yet again. But Keisha wants to get back in the spotlight, so we're going to have Keisha Morrissey on the show again shortly, maybe with another fighter. But she's working with Mark and Jano Janowski.
She's a good interview.
The fast talker. The fastest talker in the East.
Yeah. Well, let's get her and Nano on the same show and let them go at it.
Right. It'll be fun.
Well, you know what we'll do? We'll get a round table discussion. We'll have three people doing the interviews. How about this for the 28th? I'm off.
Yeah.
Get Nano on there, Nikisha Morrissey, and even throw my buddy Simon Carr in there. You and I wouldn't have to do a thing. Just and let them.
Yeah, I haven't done anything like that in a while. But tonight we got one of her choices as well, Michael and Michelangelo. We had Michelangelo on the show tonight. Did you know that? Dug him up. The Michelangelo Perez.
I had a friend of mine when I was a kid growing up. That was his real first name, Michelangelo. I didn't know that for years. I mean, I was a kid. You know, I used to call him Michael Joe. I didn't know any better. And they're like, you know why you used to call him Michael Joe? I'm like, no, I was his name, Michael Joe. They're like, because his real full name is Michelangelo. And you couldn't say all that. You were like 5 years old. I was like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's try these guys again.
Which I just wanted to say something. We didn't get a good laugh out of this. Talking about, you know, the show to a couple of our listeners, Double T, my good friend. I was talking to her last week. I yelled at her for missing the Rock and Marciano tribute show, especially because she's Italian. So I sent her my poem, which she got a good kick out of. And I was, you know, telling about some of my other poetry exploits. At the time when I was writing that poem, I was, you know, writing poems for other things. And I don't know if I ever told you it's a love poem I wrote, that a colleague of mine at work could give to his wife.
No.
Oh, you didn't hear this? I told this girl Tony I would find it for. Because it's so sappy and so pathetic. But I have, this was like 11 years ago. A guy that I was working with. And he was like, yo, man, can you do me a favor? Yeah, man, what's up? He said, can you write a love poem for my wife? Like it's for me. We're having some trouble with our marriage. And maybe this will help. Maybe this will, you know, help me save my marriage. Yeah, not a problem. So I wrote this horrible, horribly sappy, crappy poem that all, like, these little teenage girls would just love, you know. And one line that I still remember was, you're only 31, as lovely as I've seen. Even if I don't always say it, I love you is what I mean. Really pathetic. Well, a month or so later, he gets fired from the job. And I come to find out one of the reasons he got fired is he was making sexual advances to one of his male coworkers. Basically, his marriage is falling apart because he was gay.
Oh, man.
My poem didn't save it. The poem did not save it.
Dude, that's a gay story.
You know, that was one story I was telling the other night when I was talking about some of my poetry exploits, and that has to be one of the best yet most embarrassing stories of my poetic career.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of this thing in high school one time, and this girl was like one of the most beautiful black girls I'd ever seen in my life, you know. And I'm just a regular guy hanging out in high school, right? I'm in the lunch line one day, and she comes over to me, and she's like, no, I really like this guy over here. And I don't really want to walk up to him, so could you introduce me to him or tell him that I like him, you know? So I didn't even really know this dude, you know, but I was like, all right, whatever. I know who he is. I know his name. So I went over there and I told him, and these two ended up being a couple all through high school, so I was like the matchmaker. But he's the rugged-looking dude, you know. You wouldn't expect it even, like, you know, be like, oh, that's the guy I want to talk to, but he was a nice meeting in heaven.
I got one.
Anyone else?
I got one that's pretty good. When I was at Lock Haven, the year the same year that I fought Jordan, the same year we were in the Nationals together, we were in, like, a major party house, you know, hanging out all the time. Well, our one roommate, he had been dating this girl since high school, and they kind of broke up the year before. So, I mean, basically, he was just, I mean, I used to get a little pissed off at him. Because we'd be at a party, and we'd be like, you know, like when we were getting ready for homecoming, we were collecting tickets for the next big party coming up. And this idiot, he's like not paying attention. He's leaving a little money on the table. I'm like, yo, I know you want to dance and hang out and, you know, smooth talk with the girls. Don't leave an envelope with $300 on the table. Mm-hmm. So, but he was always, you know, he was the ultimate player, you know, and he tried to be all cool and all this and all that. So, we're hanging out for one day, and he used to run our DJ booth, and where we had our dance room. And then one girl comes up to me. She was in one of my classes. I really didn't know her that well, but she was a cute girl. She comes up to me and she's like, hey, how you doing? You recognize me from class? I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, so I'm talking to her, and she's kind of cute. She goes, would you mind introducing me to your roommate up there? You know, I think he's cute. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a problem. She's like, I heard he's a player. Mm-hmm. Is that true? I said, absolutely. I said, he's a hell of a football player, a basketball player, a baseball player. And I said, and he used to play wrestling, too. Obviously, I know you don't play wrestling, but I had to come up with off the player bit. That's not what I mean. I'm like, oh, then I have no idea what you're talking about. So me and him were joking around. I'm like, yeah, you're a player, man. You're a baseball player and a football player. He's like, oh, he's a dick. I'm like, I didn't say you were a player.
Well, anyway, let's try this, Nate, again. If we can get this little reality show on a roll. Let's go, Nate.
Hello?
Nate.
Hey.
Hey, how's
it? This is Rich.
This is Rich.
Hi. Sorry about that. I guess I think we're in an area with no service, so I just got your message, but I didn't know where to call you back.
All right. So do you have Kai with you, too?
Yeah, Kai's right here.
All right.
Sorry, put you on speaker. We can do this.
Sure.
All right.
All right, so tell us a little bit about this show that you guys got.
So we launched a show 2 weeks ago, and it's called White Collar Brawler. It's distributed exclusively on the web. Through YouTube and our website, whitecollarbrawler.com. And basically the premise is that for 3 months, we've decided to quit our jobs and train to become amateur boxers. So we're training here in San Francisco twice a day with a boxing coach, with a strength conditioning coach, and we're kind of going, you know, zero to hero, off the couch to 3 months from now, and we're going to get into a ring. First, we're actually going to fight each other in an elimination round, and then we're going to fight, the winner of that is going to fight an amateur boxer in a live fight that we're going to have all of our fans come out to and make a real kind of a big fight night event.
Cool. So did you guys know each other beforehand, or did you meet through one of you coming up with the idea?
Yeah, we grew up together. We went to kindergarten together all the way through high school. In college, we started getting into video and film and web series, and We actually went to Asia after college, and we made our first web series there about our adventures in Vietnam. And then we came back. We got desk jobs for a while. Nate was in New York. I was in San Francisco, wasted away. Then we started a company together, ran that for about 2 years, sat in front of computers. And eventually we just got sick of it. We decided, you know what, we want to do something cool, something original, something that we've wanted to do for a while, and we just said, why don't we just scrap this business thing for a while, 3 months, boxing, let's do it. And that was the plan, basically.
Cool. And did you either of you two box before?
No. Neither of us have ever boxed. We were athletes in high school, I guess. You know, we played basketball, and they played some soccer. But we're not particularly strong. We're not. You look at us, you don't think we're the boxing type. But I think that's what our trainer sort of liked about the whole idea. Our trainer, his name is Angelo. He's been doing boxing for about 25 years. He liked the idea of these two guys who he doesn't typically see in the boxing world, sort of underdogs. And he wanted to challenge to see if he could bring us up to actually, you know, compete at the amateur level.
All right.
Now, what weight class will you guys be fighting in?
Was the question what weight class?
Yeah.
I'm at around 180, and Kai is 165. So we're gonna have to get within 10 pounds of each other to fight each other for the elimination round. And then, what are you planning on fighting? After that, I think we're just gonna. When we fight in the amateur fight, we still have to be kind of within 10 pounds of the people we fight. That's sort of the the rules, but I think I'm going to be fighting at 174 and Kai, like, 160.
Okay. Well, if you need any tips on cutting weight, I went from 180 to 165 in 2.5 days once. For about 3 days, 3 full days.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I said, if you need any tips on cutting weight, you got to get down to 165. I said, I went from 180 to 165 in about 3 days once. It wasn't pleasant. I didn't feel too good, but it can be done.
Yeah, that's good to know.
So what is it that you enjoy most about the whole boxing process, learning the game and all that?
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, that's really what was missing when we were office workers. There's no physical challenges that you go through at a day-to-day basis. You know, there are challenges, but they're filled with bureaucracy. There's a boss you have to deal with. It's not fulfilling. And, you know, we've only been doing this now for about three and a half weeks or so, but every single day we're tested. We're pushed to our limits. And it's really gratifying afterwards. So that's what I'm enjoying the most. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Every day I still dread it quite a bit. There's quite a bit of fear because we just started sparring actually yesterday, and I think our trainer wanted to make an example of us, sort of teach us, you know, what the sport was all about. So we got pretty beat up, and now we're en route to our second sparring session. So there's still some dread, but you know, after we work out, there's a sense of accomplishment that we certainly weren't getting before.
And anybody get a black eye yet?
I don't have a black eye. I do have a mark underneath my eye, which I think can grow. but no black eye yet.
That means you're keeping your hands up. That's good.
Yeah, learn that the hard way.
We all do. But my favorite punch was always the jab when I was an amateur boxer in college. Tony and I actually were in the same collegiate boxing association in college and in the same exact bracket 1 year for the only year that I got to box in the national tournament. And we ended up missing out on fighting each other, but now we host a show together. And we always talk about maybe someday we'll still do it. We're not too old yet.
Never too late.
Nope. Well, we both fought similar opponents, so we kind of have an idea that it would have been definitely a good fight in our prime, I guess, you could call it. I don't know.
Well, it would have been all about styles, too. It would have been the boxer versus Neanderthal, and I'm not going to let you guys take a guess on which one is which, but I carry my club and I, you know, drag women around by their hair.
I love my jab, so I actually lost in the fight because I was trying to use it to just, you know, keep the guy off me. The guy's name is Michael Jordan, believe it or not, big black guy from West Point, and not the Michael Jordan, of course, but he played the inside game well, and I tried to take it easy because actually the guy I was going to face was going to be a guy that had reach like you wouldn't believe. So in the second round of the tournament, I'd won my first fight, and I go, well, I'm just going to try to coast through this one. And he didn't let me, so I got a bronze instead of a silver. But he got knocked out in 30 seconds.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Round, so I'm kind of glad that things worked out the way they did. That was my 1 year. And I'll tell you, what got me in shape for it was we had a coach who was a former Marine. And he knew what he was doing. I mean, he was in shape even in his 60s. He would run with us every Wednesday morning at like 5 a.m. We'd go for a 3-mile team run, and he would be beating most of the boxers who had been training. He'd be smoking a cigar, classic Marine style, you know?
Yeah.
But he actually had us running 7 miles every Tuesday through the hills of Virginia. This was at Virginia Military Institute. And that's what got me in shape to end up going to the Nationals. That's really the only thing that I could credit more than anything else was having the wind. Because I had the skill, the punches and everything. I had been boxing since I was a kid. But it's the heart and the wind that will kill you every time. You can have all the skill in the world, but if you can't go 3 minutes straight at your best to end a fight when you have to, then you know, you're not going to get very far.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of beach runs. We're here in San Francisco, and we meet once or twice a week on Ocean Beach and do sprints. But, yeah, the road work, I'm definitely coming to appreciate it more and more as this process is going on. And it's now that we've gotten in the ring and started sparring, you kind of realize you have that mouthpiece in and, you know, you have headgear on, and it's not a piece of cake. You really got to have a lot of stamina for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing, and I always tell people this, especially when I train other people now, is you never really get to appreciate the weight of most bag gloves. Most bag gloves are around 12 to 14 ounces. Most sparring gloves are 16 to 18 ounces. You never really get to appreciate how much 1 pound really is until your arms are dead and you can't hold them up and you still got that 1 pound glove on the fist of that hand. And it feels like you're carrying a 50-pound, you know, dumbbell.
Right.
That's the one I always tell people that when I trained, when I first started, you know, it was my first fight I lost because I was not in shape. And I had been beating the guy, and I was out of gas, and then I was like a punching bag. And I said, you know, going forward, I said, I'm not the best fighter out there. I'm more of a slugger, brawler type, but I will get my ass in shape, you know? Because what you got to do is, I mean, especially if it's a fight like me, I can't coast on the outside. I'm too short. I got to fight in close. If you're trying to fight in close and you can't throw any punches, you're in deep shit. That's one thing I always stress to people now. You may not be the best, or you might be the best, but if you are not in the best condition, it don't matter.
Now, were you two guys fight fans or boxing fans before this, or have you just recently become fans of the sport?
Yeah, we were fight fans. I say casual fight fans. We weren't that hardcore, but our boxing coach, Angelo, has definitely initiated us into the world, and he's Filipino, and so he's, going to the Pacquiao fight in the press box, and he's, like, very much has talked a lot about professional boxing.
And you guys said you did a web series already. Was that fight related, too, or something different?
No, that was a travel show for Lonely Planet, the travel guidebook series. So this is our first boxing-related show.
Although when we were in Thailand, we got a very up close and personal look at Muay Thai, and we followed it in Bangkok, and we followed it up north in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and that was really our first taste, I'd say, of professional or amateur fighting, and it was really a spectacle over there. They have, you know, very small stadiums built, and they just pack it filled. Totally full, and then they get 2 14-year-olds, and they know how to really savage.
Yeah, I mean, I always talk about, it's kind of funny to me how the UFC splits up into the WC and the UFC, and you never get to see some of these guys that are at the lighter weights because they're on a different channel than MMP for your time. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where boxing always wins over MMA across the world because you have every weight class. You know, whether it's Muay Thai or kickboxing or regular boxing, you have every weight class represented. And by excluding a lot of those lower weight classes the way they do in the UFC and some of the other MMA leagues, you don't see enough of them. They exclude so many different races of people and groups of people who are just lower weight, you know. Sucks.
Right.
I don't understand why there aren't more Japanese and Chinese guys and Asians, period, in the UFC. And it's, well, I think a lot of it is just weight. A lot of them aren't that weight.
I think you're right.
But looking at boxing, what do you guys like most so far about being involved with the sport of boxing?
I like how you kind of develop your own style that's, like, you know, associated with things you don't even think about, like, you know, your reach or kind of your movements. So that kind of naturally develops into the style you fight with, and then when you pair with another boxer, you kind of, it's like a chess match about, you know, if you're kind of pretty short, stocky guy like I am, and if you're going to get any punches in, you got to go into the body.
Or if you're, like, you know, lanky guy with long arms like Kai is, you can kind of stay far back. So I just think it's really interesting how the, you know, the natural kind of measurements of the body reflect on people's styles and how those styles, like, interact.
Oh, yeah, my last sparring match when I tried to make a little comeback into my own amateur career was against a kid who ended up going to the Nationals for Golden Gloves last year. And I had boxed him 2 months before that. He was just an up-and-coming kid. He had a little bit of skill. He had a hell of a lot of athleticism. He was in great shape. And they said, oh, this kid's a little green. Why don't you go in there and box him? And so I went in there, and I tried to establish my jab, even though my coach, who had 47 professional fights, my trainer, who was one of the Petronelli, the famous Brockton family that was part of Marvin Hagler's successful team there. He tells me, go to the body. You know, this kid's got reach on you. You got no chance with the jab, you know, but he knew I liked my jab. He says, go to the body. And, of course, the only thing I was thinking was get the jab going. And I was going for his head the whole time. And I didn't even think twice to listen to my coach for some reason. I just said, I'm going to establish my jab. And then, man, that's the first time I realized you've got to listen to those guys that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to fall trapped if they want you to. And that's what I did. And he broke my rib because he went to the body.
Oh, wow.
Another lesson, you know, you can do a lot of damage by just going to the guy's body. Whether he's in good shape or not, you can break a rib really easy. A good punch.
Yeah. Hey.
Well, what's been the biggest challenge for you guys so far?
I think the conditioning part has been the biggest challenge, just kind of, you know, the day after day monotony of it. It's just something that you have to do, and you have to, you know, you have to practice every day like you're emptying the tank. But, you know, to do that day after day and really stay up for it requires kind of a level of mental focus that I don't think we had definitely hadn't had since high school, since we were, you know, playing sports competitively. You know, it's not something you can just jump into.
Yeah, it definitely takes time. Yeah, for sure. So what's your favorite punches so far?
Their punch? Well, I mean, my left hand is extremely weak. That was my weakness, so I've been working on it. And I've recently sort of gotten the left hook. Be powerful, and I figured it out. Angelo, our trainer, really worked with me. It's all about the body and the leg and your core.
Right.
And you know, once I figured that out, I'm getting a little pop on that left hook, and it feels really good because I was worried that, you know, as someone who's tall, lanky, I really do have to rely on that left arm for the jab, you know, and the left hook. Just the fact that I've been able to work out that left hook, it gives me, you know, a little reason to hope. I might be able to get good at this.
So you're a right-hander? You're right-handed?
Yeah, both right-handed. Yeah.
So the left hook, you want to look at Mike Tyson. That's what I used to teach my boxers when I coached at high school. Is your left hook. Mike Tyson had one of the best left hooks, and he's got a lot of clips where it shows him knocking people out with the uppercut, but usually the left hook came right before that. And if you look at the way he threw it, and look at his legs in particular, that's where it really comes from. I mean, people can say that it comes from the swing of the hips and, you know, all the rest of the stuff that comes from the hips up, but the 90% of the power comes off the toes, the way that you just throw it and you follow through right up to the tips of your toes with your legs. And
all right.
Giant calves from jump roping so much. A lot of people say he stopped doing so well when he stopped wanting to train, and when people were like, you know, go jump rope, and he said, go screw yourself, you know, I don't want to do it.
Right.
So that really was what made him great, that left hook. And I used to teach people how the peekaboo style in particular for him worked. Not everybody, but, you know, being a little taller guy, if you were taller than him anyway, you just want to accentuate the push off the foot when you throw that. And there's a certain twist to it. I mean, I'm sure you're going over stuff with your coach, but that was one of my favorite punches too. And I'll tell you, the only thing that changed it was Tony, my co-host here, introducing me more to Rocky Marciano. And Rocky had a right hand that was more a straight right than a right hook. But, man, I changed my game after I lost Rocky. But I used to love left hook. But is that both of his favorite punch or another one?
Yeah, I really like the left. Like the jab. That's probably my favorite punch. I like how you can kind of test someone with it and get them pissed off without really opening yourself up too much. I think of myself as kind of a quick guy, so I like to throw the jab and then try to get out and just try to bother the person a little bit.
Yeah, I used to be famous for when I'd go to parties, I'd get a few beers in me, and I'd say, I'll box anybody in the room one-handed. Because I used to have such a good jab that I could just keep it out there. You know, I learned one thing from actually Bad Chad Dawson, the only one I've ever seen that's such a jab that he uses as much as I used to. And you just basically, you can use it two ways. You can use the pepper jab, which I call, pepper jab is basically the speed, right in the face all the time, no power. I mean, you can put a little bit of power on it and confuse people, but then there's the stiff jab where you just throw it out there to hurt somebody. And it comes like a straight left from the guy who's left-handed. And so it's just such a versatile punch. But, the best example of it is the heavyweight champion, Vladimir Klitschko. He just beats people to death with his jab. every fight, it's a jab fest. So that's a guy to watch for, learning how to jab really well. And, he's obviously got the reach, too, so that's important with the jab. But my last sparring match, don't try to jab with a guy who outreaches you. Jab to the body is fine, but trying to jab with a guy to the head who's outreached you and even is in better shape than you, that's even worse.
one of the things I learned when I started boxing a number of years ago, being a short guy, knowing that I had to put a lot of pressure on, I was just walking, I was standing straight up and I was walking straight in. And unfortunately, a shorter reach, you're going to get hit before you can land. And it's just, a fact of the matter. And I was getting beat, and not only was I getting beat, but I was getting beat up. And I'm fortunate enough to I don't live in Philadelphia anymore. I live a short while out of the city, only about 20 miles. But I used to train in a very, very tough South Philadelphia gym. We had some guys there that we put in world title fights about 15 years ago when he was just getting out of prison. Mike Tyson did make a stop to our gym to train. He was fighting in Philadelphia at the Spectrum. And he did come to my rec center for 2 days. The gym was closed off those days, so he could have privacy. But, it was definitely a place where you learn how to box. I mean, there was nothing fluff about it. I mean, this was hard nose. And the one thing I was told and I was taught was, you have to be in better shape, which I was saying earlier, but you got to learn physics. You got to know physics out there, and I couldn't understand why. And they showed the direct, distance between two points. The shortest distance is a straight line, obviously. So if I put my left jab on out and my taller opponent, who has a 5-inch to 6-inch reach advantage on me, puts his left arm out, he will land his before I do. But if I take one step over either side and create an angle, now his punch, he's going against his body. He's got to reach across, and I have a shorter distance to land my punch. And by me circling, and I dictate where he has to go, because if I take a step to the left and he doesn't, then I'm in control. He has to step to the left, too, to keep pace. I take another step. He's got to go, too. Now I am controlling his movements. So this is, not only do you have to be better, not only have to be stronger, not only have to be in better shape, you have to be smarter. Know physics. Know how to attack these guys. The other thing you have to do is, if you're a shorter guy, you either have to be on the inside people lay on the outside. Don't be right at his punching distance because you're going to get your head knocked off. And I was actually working in the corner one night with my college boxing coach. And this is right after I learned this lesson. And the one fighter we were helping in the corner, my fight had gotten canceled that night, was a fighter of ours, and he was fighting somebody taller. And he was not doing that. He was standing right at the edge of the guy's punches, and he was getting his ass kicked. And I remember that he came up to the corner, and the coach was slapping the shit out of him. Like, why aren't you listening? And yelling at him. I said, shit, that will never happen to me. Never. My next fight, I'm getting my ass kicked. And that bell rang, and I looked at that coach, I said, oh, shit. And I swear, to this day, that I was going to stand in the opposite corner with my opponent and his coach, like, yo, I'm going to get my ass kicked worse back there than I am over here. So can I stay here for a bit? But that's one thing that I learned. Just because you're short doesn't mean you can't out-jab an opponent. It doesn't mean you can't out-box an opponent. You have to know physics.
Yep, absolutely.
Got to use your head in there.
Whoa, whoa, what'd you say?
Guys, you have to use your head. You have to. It's definitely a thinking man's game. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, some days you go out there, and like some days you're going to implement a game plan. Like, you know, when you have that first amateur fight, you might have grand ideas coming in, and something might not work. You got to be able to think on your feet. You have to say, okay, this isn't working. What am I going to do to turn this around? Because this is obviously, I'm obviously having some trouble here. And like I said, it's all a thinking man's game. That's why I love the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, too.
So tell us a little bit more about the show in general. You know, what's the format going to be? How do people watch? Is it going to be an hour, half an hour, installments? Any other shows that it's like? Whatever you guys can think of.
So the show is released on Tuesdays and Fridays every week. Debuted last Tuesday, so this is on Friday. Tomorrow we release our fourth episode. Episodes are going to be between 4 and 7 minutes long, so they're pretty short. The web kind of lends itself to shorter form content because you assume people are, you know, watching on a lunch break or, you know, kind of stealing away to watch it so they don't have quite as much time to watch the, you know, full 30 or hour-long episode. The episodes follow our training in real time. So the action, most of the action that you see in the episodes has happened the week previous to us releasing the episode. So it really, you really kind of get a sense of where we're at right now. And that's going to be great, especially towards the end of our training where we're gearing up for the fight. And we can really start to heist the fight. And it'll be kind of like the 24/7 feel, but it'll be, you know, fully in real time. And we'll be able to show people up to the very minute where we step into the ring, kind of how we're progressing, and all that. As far as shows that it's similar to, I'd say there have been comparisons made to, you know, Fight Club or something like that, where we're trying to show a little bit about how ridiculous the world, the office, kind of corporate world is through this, the world that's diametrically opposed to it, which is the boxing world. I think between Fight Club and, a show like 24/7 that follows training in real time, those are probably the closest comparisons. So all the episodes can be viewed at whitecollarbrawler.com. And like I said, they're uploaded to the site twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays in the morning. So that's the best way to get a show.
And how did you come up with this idea in the first place?
We were looking for something that could kickstart our lives, basically. And we walked into a gym one day, just sort of on a whim, and saw an amateur fight. And, we really liked the scene. We liked the look on the faces of the participants when they completed it. And it just seemed like something that, you know, could really jive with what we were looking for. And we started asking around, and everyone who's been part of boxing has said incredible things about the sport. and we slowly got into it, and then we finally made the decision, you know what, we want to make a new web series, and boxing is right there. It's something we can do at home. It's sort of like an adventure. Let's do it. So we just jumped right in.
So now the big question I bet a lot of people are asking is quit your office job. So how are you supporting this amateur boxing push here? I mean, does the show make revenue somehow, or did you guys save up good?
Yeah, so what we did, we went out and pitched the idea to investors. So we got an investor from Silicon Valley to come on and help us fund the show. And then from that point, we had enough money to go out and make our first slew of episodes, but then we wanted to get sponsorships, so we started contacting brands like Everlast, local brands around San Francisco to help us with, you know, whether it's money or just equipment, anything to make the show work. So we sort of pieced together our budget, and now we have about enough money that we can do a full season, 30 episodes. So.
Wow. 30 episodes. That sounds good. And what other kind of stuff that's non-boxing gets thrown into the show? Is it anything like the Jersey Shore?
No, it's not like Jersey Shore at all, sadly. But we are really interested in. We think there's two groups of people that like our show: boxing fans, certainly. Also, people who work in office jobs. We'll like this because we're not necessarily we're speaking to a group of people who are bored, who want to do something else, and we sort of use that juxtaposition, boxing and office life, to sort of say what our message is. So you know, we go back and forth between boxing and office life, and sort of like an interesting mix, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot like Fight Club, sounds like.
Yeah, Fight Club, they're real, sort of. I mean, real in the sense that our faces actually get hit, we get bruised. Sometimes I wish it was just correct.
So any regrets thus far?
Any what?
Any regrets thus far? Any, like, how to
say so? I mean, there are moments, I think, when we regret it, when yesterday when we were getting knocked around, but in general, so far it's been great. I mean, the lessons we've been learning, the skills we're learning, it's been overall very positive. You agree?
Yeah.
And what do you love most about boxing in general?
I'd say our coach has just kind of showed us the different layers to it. Like I said, the conditioning is so important. We talked about the mental game. It's not just there are many kind of aspects to yourself that you have to refine in order to be ready for a fight. And so to kind of put all those pieces together, it's kind of you become like a complete athlete. And I think just kind of seeing it as kind of the pinnacle of athletic expression and just kind of, the most in shape you could ever be in your life is right before an amateur boxing fight. Kind of, it just blows all the other sports that I've ever played in out of the water.
That's a good point. I mean, that's probably, other than wrestling in high school, it was the toughest sport I've ever had to do. And I kind of cheapened my experience in college boxing by saying, well, only so many colleges have boxing matches. It wasn't like we were a Division I sport, but it was still tough, especially because, a lot of the kids that box were all from military schools, and I had gone through the first year at Air Force Academy before going to Norwich University in Vermont, and then I did an exchange program at the Virginia Military Institute. So I knew all that environment, and I'd been part of it. And I did my first year, I did real boxing at the Air Force Academy. So that's actually where I got my basics, the training and basic boxing style from their coach. And their coach had won the national title for years in a row at one point. And just a, it was an unbelievable environment to train in. You know, you're in Colorado Springs in the mountains. So, you know, by the time I actually got the box in the collegiate ranks, it was, I knew the seriousness of it, but at the same time, I always wished, you know, there was more other schools that had it, you know, and there was just more competition out there. Especially when I got to run it at the school Norwich, you know, I was coach at Norwich, and I tried to do events close by, and no other school had it. You know, it was tough, but there's a reason for that. It's because it's a hell of a tough sport. Take somebody
that
really just has no fear. I mean, I know the movie, one of the Rocky movies, he tries to tell you fear is your best friend, but, you know, there has to be part of you that has no fear at some point when you're in that ring, if you really love it, I think.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's always usually after that first punch. I'm a very defensive fighter, so I wait for somebody to try to, you know, get a good shot in on me, and I step out of the way and hit him with my best shot. If I'm in my game, you know, best game. But everybody's different, you know, you find out who you are when you're in that ring. And you just got to kind of feed off whatever your strength is. But the thing that every boxer says that we interview, it's all about the conditioning, basically.
Yep.
You got to look good in there in more ways than one. You got to show up there looking like you worked out prior to that fight and that you can handle anything, you know. And even in the MMA now, just, I was just saying earlier that the last UFC fight, the whole card was like a kickboxing card. There was a lot of boxing, and they don't even know how to box. You know, they box like, they call it dirty boxing, and they also have just kind of sloppy styles, you know, because they have to worry about kicks and all sorts of other stuff and blocks. But there's nothing that the crowd responds to more than when these two guys are going toe-to-toe punching each other in the face. You know, maybe a few
right.
The way they do it, but it's all about the boxing. People love to see that, and you know, whether it's bare knuckle in the UFC or bare, almost bare knuckle, or you know, you got 12-ounce gloves on, it doesn't matter. You know, people love those slugfests. They still do. And
yep.
I've seen it on the amateur level here. I was part of a show in Boston called Battle of the Badges, where we did New York firemen versus New England law enforcement. And we had about 2,000 people there. It was a really good crowd, really healthy crowd, and they loved the slugfest. There was one kid from New York who almost got knocked out. And he looked like he was seeing stars there for a second. He'd come back and start slugging the other kid, and the crowd went wild. You know, it's a great, great feeling to have that kind of support, too. And boxing is one thing that's got over MMA. It's been entrenched. It's been out there forever. It's been around, and every community has some kind of connection to it, or, you know, you can find it somewhere around where you live in most places of the country. It's not the same about MMA. You can't even do MMA professionally in New York State, the whole state, so.
Cool. Yeah.
You guys picked the right sport, I think.
Thank you.
I think so.
Yeah, no, we definitely think so. Yeah, we considered MMA, but because it's, you know, it's rising in popularity, but I think boxing is the way to go. To show you how real the show is, we actually have to go to our training pretty soon. But were we able to answer most of your questions?
Yeah, definitely. Basically, tell us the one thing I always ask is, what's your ultimate goal in the sport? I know you're not quite in the sport yet. You haven't had your first amateur fight, it sounds like. But what's your ultimate goal with the show, number one, and you know, with your activity in the sport, or on the show, or during the show, or whatever?
I think our ultimate goal for the show is to you know, to tell this story about you know, two guys who kind of, you know, wanted a shot at doing something big and something a little wild until successfully, and have you know, a huge audience for it that we can sustain over the whole season, these 3 months, and kind of bring people into it and introduce them to the sport of boxing, which is a sport that, you know, it's been so important in American history, but recently has you know, fall a little bit in popularity, and I think it deserves a little bit of a resurgence. So, and personally, I think, you know, just having stepped in the ring to do our initial sparring, you know, I learned a lot about myself as an athlete and even as just a person. Sounds maybe cheesy, but, you know, I think just to continue to learn about my weaknesses and my strengths and start to kind of tailor my own style to fit those and just continue to develop to the point where I can, you know, beat Kai and then succeed in this amateur fight. I really do want to win.
All right. Does Kai have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I kind of just want to prove to myself that I can do it. That's the basic thing. I've always looked at boxers and been amazed that they can get in there and fight, and I'm not really an aggressive person. I don't really seek out conflict. It's just something I want to prove to myself. If I can step in there and face my fear and train really hard for a while and sort of overcome the challenge. So it's a test for myself, and that's kind of why I like it.
All right. Well, awesome, guys. We'll put up a blog story for you and everything and link to it through our website and keep an eye on it. And maybe we'll do some updates on the show here every week on how you guys are doing. So check it out. It's been great talking to you. I congratulate you on doing something that's going to help the sport of boxing, and I hope a lot of people watch it, and good luck to you.
All right. Thanks very much, Rich. Appreciate it.
Good luck, guys.
All right. See you guys.
Okay, so we got 3 minutes until the next interview with Michelangelo. But there you have the reality show guys there. Still there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, what happened, dude?
What?
You let me ramble.
You always ramble.
Yeah. That was a good interview. It should be a good series, too. I think that's kind of interesting because they never had any boxing experience whatsoever. Just walked into a gym and came up with this idea. I think it's most interesting how they paid for it. You know, they paid for it up front. That's pretty interesting. Figuring, you know, the UFC, when they did their first reality show, they had to pay their own budget to do it. They produce it themselves, you know. That's the only way they got that deal done. But, speaking of the UFC fight there, we had a pretty interesting card. I mean, it was mostly on the feet fighting, but Matt Mitrione got one of the Fight of the Night bonuses. Matt Mitrione was on The Ultimate Fighter with Kimbo Slice. And, I think his last fight was Kimbo Slice. He just demolished him. But, he's a former NFL player. I forget which team, but, he was a lineman. And, just out there kind of guy. He's a great character. But, he was on The Ultimate Fighter show, and, he's really turned a lot of heads in the UFC. He doesn't have much of a style, but he slugs. Like, you know, they call him Meathead, but he's got a hell of a punch, you know. And he connects you with a big punch, and he's got a chin, too. He takes a lot of punches. It's kind of like a younger Chuck Liddell, I don't know. But I don't know if he has the skills to hang in there, just be just like a novelty fighter, or, you know, really take it seriously. But he's... Sounds like the training regimen he's going through is just making him better and better. We'll see. He's still a little bit sloppy. He almost got himself caught. He had a rough fight. So they gave him Fight of the Night, and they gave Sean Sherk versus Evan Dunham, which I talked about a little earlier, Fight of the Night, I think, as well. But each fight got 70,000 bonuses for everybody for Fight of the Night. And... the other fight that was interesting was the main event, of course, which was Frank Mir versus Mirko Krokop. Frank Mir just pretty much demolished Krokop. It was a little bit of back and forth, but Krokop just doesn't have enough on his punches to knock anybody out, I don't think, especially not a guy like Mir. Amir just came out of nowhere with a kick to the head. I know, a knee to the head. And I didn't even see it when it happened in real time. I had to watch the replay to even see it. But, it's over after that. And then we had Chris Vidal and Matt Serra. And that was no contest. Chris Vidal, we've had on the show before. Very interesting guy. And he won, hands down. It was boxing, actually, which is kind of interesting. And it was really almost all boxing. The whole match was all boxing. And Matt Serra is a wrestler, you know. He's more of the type of guy that likes to grapple and get close, and he's got short reach, and he's smaller. He's like he has to fight like Rocky Marciano if he's going to win. So it's kind of weird that Serra let himself fall into that type of match, but he lost. He got kicked. We're getting all kinds of traffic here. What the heck's going on? Somebody wants us to call, I think. They're trying to call into us. All right. Let's get the next Michelangelo on the phone. We'll ask him if he's tucked up the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
Okay. Lately.
To leave a voice message, press 1, or just wait for the tone. To send in.
Okay, come on. Try again. Maybe he's trying to call us. Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going tonight?
I do.
You got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line with us, too.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, what's up?
How you doing? Chilling.
So you getting ready for a big fight in November, it looks like? You don't know who you're fighting yet, though?
November 6th at the Convention Center. I had an opponent when he pulled out, so right now we're in the verge of looking for another opponent. So.
All right. And you got still like 4 knockouts at lightweight?
Yeah, 9-0 with 4 knockouts.
All right. And who was your toughest fight so far?
My toughest fight, I would say, it would have been my ace. It was on Bela Figueroa for the undefeated guys. He was 5-0 with 2 knockouts from Washington. And it was a tough guy. I mean, it was a good experience for me, gaining experience for me, so it was a good fight.
All right. And what was your best moment so far in the sport?
My best moment?
Yep.
When I won the 2008 National Golden Glove National Golden Glove.
All right. Who did you have to beat for that one?
I had to fight 5 days straight, a whole week. I beat people from everywhere.
Do you remember who you fought in the championship?
Championship, it was Duran Cafaro. He was from Washington, I think.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, Tony, we call Tony our boxing ring man, so... I'm sure he has a question for you.
Well, yeah, the question I was about to ask was, pretty much a big deal. I mean, fighting at the Garden on an undercard of a guy like Zab Judah, former world champion, fought on pay-per-view, been in there with guys like Hoster Zoo, Floyd Mayweather. So, I mean, this is pretty big time. I mean, are you excited for, you know, the big step up?
I fought in big stages already. I fought in Las Vegas under the Mayweather and Marquez. I fought in big stages, but I'm just excited to at least finally fight home in North, my hometown. I'm really excited for that, and it's just been a long time coming. And you know what I mean, now I got to fight home, and I'm excited.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome. I mean, first of all, fighting out in Vegas on the Mayweather-Marquez major review. that's a huge deal. I mean, what was the atmosphere like for that out there?
That was crazy. It was lights everywhere, gaming everywhere. You know what I mean? It was a good experience for me, you know what I mean, as a grown and up-and-coming player. It was just a pleasure, you know what I mean, to be in a huge card like that, to even be a part of it. You know what I mean? It was a pleasure to me.
Now, and then did you get a chance to meet Floyd out there? Did you get a chance to talk to him? I know, there's a lot of mixed reviews on him. I mean, some people will say when you really get to meet a guy like him, he's really a lot more humble than he appears. Other people don't like him. I mean, there's nothing you can do to change him. Did you get a chance to meet him, talk to him, and if so, what was he like?
I didn't really get to talk to him, but I shook hands with him. Real humble guy, you know what I mean? He ain't what people say, you know what I mean, that he is, you know what I mean? Well, in my eyes, when I seen him, he was a real humble guy, you know what I mean? He was open arms to all the fans, you know what I mean? It was, you know what I mean? So he wasn't really a prick how everybody, you know what I mean, labeled him to be, so.
Honestly, I think he really likes to play the villain part. I think he does it more to sell tickets. There are a few things that he does that get under my skin. But some of the things he says out there, I was just reading a Ring Magazine article about him, and he was talking about, you know, they were saying like 10 guys that they think would have beaten him. And Sugar Ray Leonard was on there, which I absolutely agree with. I mean, I grew up on Sugar Ray Leonard, and he was one of my boyhood idols growing up. And Floyd came out and said, if Sugar Ray Leonard was fighting today, he wouldn't be even ranked in the top 10. And I heard that, and I almost spit milk out of my nose. but that's a lot of things he says.
It's two different eras, you know what I mean? He's pound for pound right now in this era, you know what I mean? He's pound for pound the best. And, I mean, no one would really know where he would be at in Leonard's era, you know what I mean? So that's a whole different era, you know what I mean? So it's just...
Well, the one thing, I said this a couple times on our show about Floyd, because when people find out that I have boxed for a number of years, and then when they find out that I, you know, write for a boxing website, I co-host a show, as soon as they find out I'm in the boxing game, I get two names thrown at me. Pacquiao and Mayweather. What's going to happen? Is it going to happen? Who's going to win? And look at that. And my contention has been a couple things. Style-wise, I think Mayweather wins that fight. I think he's just too good of a boxer. And if Marquez could give Pacquiao a lot of problems with boxing skills, then I think Mayweather would be able to just keep him off once and outbox him. Could Pacquiao knock him out? I think he could. But if you had to, you know, make me bet on one of them, I would bet on Mayweather.
I agree totally. I mean, I feel as though that Mayweather would outbox.
I mean, obviously Mayweather is getting older. He's 33 years old now. The only thing that could happen is, I mean, it happens to the best of them. It happened to Ray Leonard. It happened to a lot of guys. You lose that one little step. Look at Roy Jones, who was untouchable for the first so many years of his career. When he lost that one half of a second, it put him in the danger zone, and we found out his chin was his weakness. So, I mean, is it possible that Pacquiao could beat him? Absolutely. But I would still probably bet on Mayweather on that one.
Anything is possible.
Oh, absolutely. The other thing people ask me is, will the fight ever happen? And I said, well, they're really going to have to really pull a lot of strings. And people said, why? I said, because you got two fighters out here that have so much to lose that they're afraid. You know, there's a lot to gain, but I think they both think there's more to lose. Manny Pacquiao is a god in his country. He is an absolute god. He's a political god. I mean, he walks down the street and people basically will say they genocide. Floyd Mayweather is different. He's claiming to be the best fighter ever, better than Ray Robinson, better than Ray Leonard. I disagree with both of that. He's an exceptional fighter, but I don't think he's the best ever. But, okay, we'll go back to that a little bit later. If Floyd goes up there and says he loses, and say Pacquiao is fast enough that he can get in his face and bust him up a little bit, rough him up, and either beat him by decision or stop him, Now Floyd lost that zero on his record and can never say I'm the best ever because I have a loss. So I think he's worried about, you know, putting that on the line. I mean, hey, I give him all the credit in the world for fighting Shane Mosley, but it was an older Shane Mosley. I give him all the credit in the world for fighting a guy like Marquez, who was a top 5 pound-for-pound guy, but he was a smaller guy. I'd like to see him fight a guy like a Paul the Punisher Williams, a guy that when he goes in there, there would be a major disadvantage, whether it be height, whether it be reach, whether it be weight. But I think both guys are afraid to risk what they got. The reward is not great enough for the risk. And that's why I don't think the fight will ever happen, to be perfectly 100% honest.
I think it will. I think they're just trying to big the fight up even more than what it is right now. I mean, it's a fight that everybody want to see, and if they want to keep boxing, if they want to keep bringing boxing back to where it was, they have to make the fight happen. It's just something that has to happen. Man.
One of my biggest fears is not the fight not happening, but the fight happening and it not being good. Because boxing, you see right now, I mean, I love boxing. I don't think, people say boxing is dying. MMA is a grown sport. I don't see it happening. I see boxing. Okay, boxing is a little bit of the doldrums right now. We still got a lot of good, young, exciting fighters out there, and I hope you're one of them. I hope one day we'll see new headline pay-per-view cards. I like to talk to good, young fighters, guys, that, you know, 5 years from now, when they're ranked in the top 10 and getting ready for title fights and get on the cover of Ring Magazine, I can say, I interviewed that guy when he was 9-0. And I talked to him when, you know, when he was just starting out. Those are the things I love about the sport. I love going to fight cards and, you know, seeing younger. One of my favorite stories is about, and you're very young then. This was way back in the day. There was a fight card in Atlantic City, and I was about 15, and I wanted my dad to take me. And it was Michael Moore and Bert Cooper. Back in 1992. And there was a really young kid on the card. He was in his fifth pro fight. And, you know, he was in six. He was 5-0, five knockouts. And I thought he was the coolest guy in the world. And I said, I can't wait to see him again. And he was just 5-0. And you never know if you'd see him again. Arturo Gatti. I got to see him in his sixth pro fight. And that's what I love. I mean, sometimes I'll keep old boxing magazines and just reread them from like 5-10 years ago, saying, oh my God, look at this guy. They're saying he was just an up and coming guy. He's 5-0 at the time. And now it's Antonio Tarver, it's, you know, Tavares Clouds, all these guys that have really made it big time that I read about when they were small time.
Yeah. Hello?
Hey, we're still here.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's just, I mean, I agree with you, 100%. I mean, it's watching fighters grow, you know what I mean? In your eyes, it's just, I mean, it should be extraordinary, you know what I mean? So.
Now, do you have a role model in boxing or somebody that you try to emulate their style?
I look at everybody, you know what I mean? I feel as though everybody got their strengths and their weaknesses. So I try to, I mean, things that see that could work on that could work for me. Then I'll just I don't just look at somebody. I want to be like that one person because you can't never be like somebody else. I mean, you could always be here. Just you got your own shit to fit. So I feel as though I look at everybody. I mean, I take a little bit from everybody else's fight. I mean, so it's just a learning process. And I get, but their own style. You know what I mean? Everybody has a way of fighting. And this, that's what I do.
All right. Sounds like you're breaking up a little. You're like on a horse or something? It's like rumbling in the back, like horse hoofs. Tony.
You.
You're still there, all right.
Yeah.
Almost.
What's your ultimate goal in the sport?
I just want to be, I want to be a part of history. I mean, I want to bring boxing to where, how it used to be. You know what I mean? I want to be one of the top guys in boxing. Somebody, you know what I mean, kids could look up to. A huge role model. You know what I mean? And just be world champ, man. That's the biggest dream. Be world champ.
And who's your favorite fighter right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
I would say my favorite fighter. I like Mayweather. I mean, everybody like Mayweather, but I've been following Mayweather since she came out the Olympics, since I was little. So it's a fighter I always looked at, a fighter I always, I mean, learn things from. So I would say Mayweather.
And what was it like growing up in New Jersey? And how did you get involved in boxing in the first place there?
I got involved. I was 7 years old. I used to fight a lot in elementary, preschool. And all that. So my pop saw that, he seen the fight in me. So he brought me to the gym as a birthday present. And ever since I was 7 years old, ever since that, it's just been history. I stuck with it. I fell in love with the sport, and it's just been history from there.
Awesome. And New Jersey has a pretty good boxing scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard, you know what I mean, from where I come from. It's the streets, you know what I mean? It's a lot of negativity where I come from, a lot of poverty, you know what I mean? A lot of negativity, yeah. But guys like me, you know what I mean, kids can look up to and see me, I can make it out. Why they can't make it out, you know what I mean? So I just want to set that role model for everybody else. Like, I mean, if I could achieve and I could get out of here and I could make it big, then you can too, you know what I mean? We all human, we all, you know what I mean? So if I could do it, you could do it.
True that. All right. That sounds like a good plan. I mean, you know, so often I get interviews with, you know, big stars and the, whether it's MMA or boxing, and they say, oh, it's all about the money. You know, like Kimbo even said during an interview one time, I got one question to ask him, and I asked him what his ultimate goal was, and he said, it's all about the paper. Unfortunately, you know, that's how his career went. You know, he was thinking so much about the money, he ruined his knee trying to do MMA when he probably should have been doing boxing all along. He's now decided he's going to do boxing. I just thought it was kind of crazy the way they gimmicked him to death.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens when you're just all about money. You're not doing it for the right reasons. You really have to, you know, if you have one scale in the world, you got to think about, how am I going to use this to the benefit of society, you know? And
yeah. Well, definitely. You can't just stick, you know what I mean, keep your mind on just the money. There's other things, you know what I mean, out there that, you know what I mean, that comes with it, you know what I mean? People look at you, you know what I mean? So it's not only just making the money, you got to make a role model, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good to hear that. At such a young age, you're thinking that. So more power to you there.
Thank you.
Now, what do you know about this whole promotion that you're going to be fighting under next month? It's almost October 1st.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's going to be a big card. There's a lot of big names in the card too. You know what I mean? Upcoming fighters. That signed to Golden Boy, signed to Independent. One of them. I mean, it's going to be a bit good, exciting. It's going to be a lot of exciting fights on the card. I've been looking at the card, so it's going to be a huge exciting night. So I just want everybody to come out, support, you know what I mean? It's my hometown, and I mean, just show me love. So.
Absolutely, man, that sounds great.
Do you have a favorite punch?
Favorite punch? Left hook.
Oh, let's talk about that.
No, that's my favorite.
Yeah, left hook.
Gotta love the left hook, man.
But gotta hook to the bucket today. He's a hook. I'm a hook man.
I love doubling it up. You know, that's one thing that I train guys now. You know, if you can get a guy with a good hook, you know, you can bring to the body and bring that elbow down and then smash it. Bring that second hook right through his jaw or vice versa. You know, I was sparring a guy years ago, and I never really liked him that much, and he gave me a chance to whip his ass. And every time he'd throw a right hand, I'd kind of left hook, and I'll smack him upside the head. But I was putting some mustard on it, but he pulled just a little bit of mustard off of it. I didn't want to put him out. And then finally, I deep one to the head. You know, he threw the right hand. I literally slapped one up to his head, and I brought that hand up, and I drove a left hook into his liver. And he crumbled on that ground like a fetus. And I looked at him, and I was like, that's what you get for, you know, all that shit you did to me before.
to me, that's one of the best, to me, body shots. The left hook to the body is one of the most devastating punches, I mean, to me, I mean, in my opinion. I mean, body shots, you can't explain how much that, I mean, that hurt. I mean, it takes everything out of you.
Yeah, I used to be panic for the left hook. When I started boxing, and my model growing up watching fights was Mike Tyson, and he had his HBO contract I grew up on. HBO was like the only premium channel we had, so I used to watch his HBO fights.
Yeah.
My dad was actually a big boxing fan. He had a speed bag in the basement, and that's how I kind of got into it.
Yeah.
He never boxed himself, and he never knew much about it, so... We'd watch it, and I'd watch Mike Tyson, and a lot of people remember him for his uppercut, but he had that left hook, and he had the calves, and his calves were as big as they ever were. He would throw that left hook with just such bad intentions, and if that didn't knock you out, it would set you up for the knockout punch. You know?
Yeah, most definitely.
And it was like his Rocky Marciano had the right hand, and he had the left hook, and I used to teach my own boxers when I coached boxing up at school. Vermont, the Mike Tyson left hook, the way his peekaboo style made it work even better. Because the way that he would twist his knee and the point of the toe, really, it goes all the way down to the point of the toe when you're throwing that. And you just, if once you fire every muscle together the correct way with that punch, and like you said, you know, if you throw it to the body at the right angle, and you kind of, you slant it a little bit like a half uppercut, half hook when you go to the body, and boom, you break a rib. And so it's a weapon, and Mike Tyson used to do it better than anybody to the head, I think.
Mike Tyson used to do people with that.
But I went to the right hand after I watched Rocky Marciano. I used to like the left hand more than the right hand.
I can go right hand, you know, but my favorite punch, you know, it's my left foot.
Yeah.
Just love it. Just love throwing at this. I mean, I just love landing. It's just feels good. You know what I mean?
Right. You got to go to your strength, you know? That's what you love to do, you got to keep doing it. Especially if it's knocking people out. I never had the pleasure of knocking anybody out, but I was always a defensive fighter, and I kind of can relate to George Foreman when he used to lose all his fights on his comeback, and he'd go, I felt bad for the guy. I didn't necessarily feel bad for my opponents, but I would be like trying to take it easy, or I'd get flustered by something, you know. There's always, when, you know, whenever you lose, you're always not at your best, you know. Should be able to beat anybody on any given night if you believe in yourself enough and you have the skills and the conditioning. And I used to always have that when I boxed in the amateurs, but it's all like we talked about with these couple guys before you. They were on. They're going to be doing a reality show. They're just coming from the office to trying to be boxers. It's all about the conditioning, you know. You got to be in the best conditioning.
Well, most definitely, you can be. You know, to me, it don't matter how much talent you got. It don't matter. I mean, how much awesome you got. If you ain't in shape, if you ain't in shape at all, if you ain't in shape, a guy that don't have half the talent that you have, or maybe no talent at all, and he's in shape, he'll whoop your ass. You know what I mean? And I believe in that, you know what I mean? I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it happen a lot. I mean, guys, I mean, yeah, are just ordinary fighters. They just come and beat an extraordinary fight. You know what I mean? You'd be like, wow, what happened there? Like, how can that happen? But it's just the conditioning. The conditioning is one of the most important things that a fighter needs to focus on, you know what I mean? Conditioning,
yeah, unfortunately,
it'll be a bad night.
There's one guy out there who represents the best and worst example of that, and it's Buster Douglas against Tyson. came into the best conditioning of his life and beat Tyson. And he's the worst example when he came in against Holyfield and got knocked out with a huge first looping uppercut. You know, that was kind of ridiculous. But he came in out of shape. You know, he got so hyped up with winning over Mike Tyson, he didn't prepare for Holyfield. So, you know, you have examples like that all over boxing, but it's 90% conditioning, 10% heart, and, you know, the rest is a skill. You know, but it's all intermingled. And what I found when I boxed, you know, you pretty much, once you get the road work in, once you do the push-ups, the sit-ups, all that stuff, and you do your running, and you get it down to a routine, and you're sparring different people every day, and it becomes regular to you. You know, that's when you're going to push it a little bit harder or do something different and just keep developing it over time.
Yeah, most definitely. And don't get it wrong. The mental part of boxing plays a big part. I mean, being mentally ready, I think you ain't going nowhere either, you know what I mean? Mental. I mean, you could be physically prepared, but if you ain't mentally, you could beat yourself before you even get in there. I mean, mentally. So that mental, the mental part of it is another important part, I think, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when you're going through sparring sessions and you're just naturally getting hurt. You know, you hit with something and you're home with a headache. You know, it gets rough after a little while, even just training. I just went back to it at my age, almost 30, I'm 33 tomorrow, October 1st. And, you know, I went back in and I ended up going in against a kid who went to the Nationals in Golden Gloves this last year. And he broke my rib. Broke my damn rib. But I was running like 5 miles a day and I thought I could do it. And just get past a certain age, man. You got to watch out. But I found when I did the conditioning and I did the work, you know, I was actually proud of myself more than anything because I realized, well, you know, I got a nice scrape myself off the ground and I went back in there and I competed with that kid, you know. I was only supposed to do 2 rounds. I did the full 2 rounds and I broke my rib at the beginning of the second round.
at least you got up there and did it, you know what I mean? A lot of people won't even dare to get in, you know what I mean? At least you got up there and did it and I give you props for that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the only thing is I didn't listen to my coach. My coach said to go for his body and reach over me. And not only did this kid go to the Nationals for the Golden Gloves, he got himself a tattoo of a speed bag and boxing gloves on his arm. And I seen him later at a show that he was supposed to fight at, but he didn't end up fighting yet. He was just there to hang out. And I seen the tattoo, and I go, yeah, you're really serious about the sport. You're wearing it on your sleeve, huh? He goes, yeah. And he's going to be something fearsome. He's going to be a light heavyweight, 175. He tore me up pretty good. And I thought I was all that. I was training hard up to that point. He kind of sucked the wind out of me big time, more ways than one. But, you know, you got to pick yourself up off the ground, and you got to consider the good out of that situation. Like, I didn't realize even until after the Nationals. That, geez, you know, he was a pretty tough kid. You know, I thought he was just some guy off the street. So just to hang with somebody like that, you know, you got to give yourself props at my age. So maybe I'll keep at it. Maybe I'll get back to the amateur level and do something with it. But I don't know if I want a rematch just yet. He's a pretty tough guy. But, what's been the thing that you love most about boxing over the years?
The traveling, man. Traveling and the meeting of, I mean, traveling, I travel everywhere. I travel all over the United States, man, with boxing. I mean, it's been a pleasure. It's been a good experience for me. So I learned a lot of things, seen a lot of places. So it's just that about boxing, you know what I mean? I love that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And what was your favorite place to go?
Favorite place that I went, I would have to see that town, Vegas.
Vegas? I didn't know.
Yeah. You like Vegas? I had fun in Vegas.
Once. I didn't really have time to enjoy it, but I went there for a weekend. It was Halloween weekend, I think 2008. And I don't know, I just didn't like it. It was too much for me. But I didn't get to see a fight there, so I probably should have gone to a fight there, and I would have had a different experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't have money to blow at the crap tables or anything else, so.
I'm not a gambling type of person. I don't like gambling at all.
It's funny. The one thing that I won, it was the giant slot machine in the hallway of the hotel. It was at Bout.
Yeah.
And it's like a dollar to play the thing, you know. So I did it. Pulled the big thing. Boom, I won. And they give you like these two huge coins. I should have just kept the coins and went home, but I cashed them out and I played slots with them. I was like, yeah. Would have had some souvenirs right there.
Sure.
I just went out there for business to meet some people. So it was kind of a bad way to enjoy Vegas, but... It was right on the strip. I walked around. I had a good time just seeing everything. But, you know, it's a place that you really want to be with your friends, have a good time, you know, enjoy the whole thing, the shows, the fights, everything. You got to have it planned out and, you know, have some money to spend to really enjoy it.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, you need money to spend in Vegas to have fun. Hands down.
But where in Vegas were you fighting? Did you fight at?
I fought at the MGM.
Oh, cool. That's where a lot of the UFC fights are, too.
I also fought at the Hard Rock.
All right.
Check that out. Right there. Where else I fought? I think I fought twice. Twice at least.
And what's your other favorite venue? Any other place you remember particularly?
I'm about to say, California was cool.
California?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some traveling from New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's farther west than I've ever gone. Not California. Vegas is the farthest west I've gone. Used to be. I went to Vegas. There's nothing like flying over those freaking mountains. You know, just
yeah.
These things ever end.
The whole view, experience the view.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But Tony, you got any questions?
No, I mean, pretty much I asked all mine.
Tony's all out of questions. All right. Well, we only got a few minutes left in the show here, about 12 minutes, so we got to do a wrap up. And anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank tonight?
Give a shout out to everybody. I know y'all, everybody, all my loved ones, everybody. They know who they are.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you on ESPN or HBO or Showtime one of these days.
Thank you for having me on the talk show.
Keep an eye out for you.
Most definitely. Thank you.
And, you know, we'll link the interview to our site and everything and, you know, let people know that, you know, you're coming to fight.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for spending some time talking to us about your career and best of luck. And whoever you fight, better watch out.
Most definitely. Yeah. And
for that left hook. All right. Thanks for the interview, and we'll definitely be watching out for you. Send us the highlight reel or something. All right. Have a good night.
Best of luck to you, and you know, we'll be watching out for you. I mean, it was a pleasure having you on tonight with us.
And he's already out. No. All right, so that's Michelangelo Perez, great fighter, 9-0 start with one draw, and it sounds like he's got the right head on his shoulders for sure, coming from a place he said there was a lot of poverty, it was a bad scene, and he wants to show people this is how you get out of it, this is the role model that you want to play. This is how you do it, and that's a hell of a goal to have as a young boxer like he is. So we had a group of people on tonight who want to do nothing more than further the sport of boxing with their contribution. So it's
that's great. I mean, I always love hearing something like that. That is fantastic.
Yeah, I figured that would be right up your alley. Next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to do the MMA overload. But Tony will never get to ask a single question. No. He'll be like, Rich. I'll be like, so. I won't do that. We might have one boxing guest. Actually, we've had quite the overload of people trying to get on our show. We had somebody that we definitely have to mention. MMA agents have been giving us a lot of great interviews. Speaking of, we talked about Chris Lytle earlier. They hooked us up with him. And Farid Kader, who we probably could have had on tonight if we didn't have a booked schedule with two interviews. His upcoming bout is going to be October 8th in China. And unfortunately, we'd have to do it one night before his fight, and I don't know if he would do that next Thursday for the interview. So we're going to...
Knowing the way I was, I wouldn't do an interview once we're fighting.
No. So we're going to do an interview on the 16th of October with him, but he has an October 8th fight in China, and it will be the co-main event against... I don't even know if I'm pronouncing this right, but forgive me if I'm not. EIG... Ishikawa at 175 pounds for the WW title. I don't know what W is. So, the WW title. And it's going to be shown on ESPN Star in 24 countries to 300 million potential viewers. And I know one of them is not going to be Tony. So that's kind of interesting. The website is www.fury-elite.com for that fight. Check it out. He's a pretty good fighter. We're going to have him on the 16th. So it should be an interesting show. Also, discipline.com. We're going to have some website pictures done, put up tonight, maybe tomorrow morning. Believe it or not, Tony, I have to write about the Green Bay Packers and the New York Giants for my new assignment.
Oh, great.
New website, opposingviews.com.
I can write an article in keywords. They both talk.
Yeah, I don't know if my editors will like that summation.
Oh, sorry.
I'm supposed to have at least 300 words. But this is an interesting gig. I got it off... site called odesk.com, and it's opposingviews.com is the website, and they have all kinds of news, but I got hooked up with a sports job, and I do little blog articles, and I do one on the Patriots. It said they need to improve with their linebacking core, number one on defense, and they need to get Randy Moss and Tom Brady on the same cylinder, the same wavelength. And so they can throw that. Tom used to throw that pass to him where he'd just reach up in the air and he'd have it, you know, because he's got so much height over these other defenders. But they haven't been doing that lately. You know, he hit him with one touchdown where he caught one-handed so far that I've seen. But he used to do that all the time. So if they get that going and they get the other receivers under their wing, you know, Welker and Moss need to teach the other receivers how to come back at it, but... It's a pretty good article. I put it out on Facebook today. And I don't know. I'm going to have to do some research because I really don't know much about Green Bay. And I really don't want to write anything good about any New York team, but I'm going to have to. Is anybody good?
Let me give you some tidbits. The Green Bay fans, they like to wear cheese on their head. And basically, they have no lives. They were shown a couple of years ago up in Green Bay with it. Sunday during the game, they were showing at the local mall. There's like three people in the mall. They're all like 80-year-old women. And everybody was watching the game. So they're kind of rabid fans, which is a good thing. Well, see, I have a few different Green Bay Packers because my dad was friends with one of their fans, and we made it in the game like 5 or 6 years ago, and the guy never paid me, so I still hold that grudge. And let me go back to the Giants. The Giants, I don't like them. I really don't like them.
and I can't stand Eli Manning. He looks like an Oompa Loompa in shoulder pads. And I'm going to tell you something, Rich. He can say, well, he won the Super Bowl. He won the Super Bowl. Justin Tuck, O.C. Junior, and Lucas Straight won the Super Bowl, along with the guy who's no longer in the league who caught a ball on his helmet.
Yeah.
Whole reason the Giants were even close in that game was because of their defense, not because Shelai did anything great that game. So the only reason he got the MVP, and that is my tally, I'm doing sour grapes because the Eagles haven't won shit in forever, and I don't see him winning anything anytime soon. The only reason he got MVP was because he's a little brother, and everybody wanted to make it such a good story. In 2000 and whatever it was, Peyton Manning won the MVP, and then the following year, little brother Eli, the forgotten little brother that everybody makes fun of, wins the MVP. They won it because they gave it to him because it was a good story, not because he did anything good. He had one good pass that game that happened to be the touchdown pass. I'll give him that because Ellis Hobbs, who is now an Eagle, was burnt worse than a blackened piece of toast.
Vic so far.
Hey, Michael Vick almost sent me to Cancun a couple of years ago. I can't go bad on the guy. But to be honest, Michael Vick, tremendous athlete, and you can tell he's a lot better than he was last year. Last year, he didn't have his legs underneath him. He wasn't in shape. He was heavy. He just wasn't, at his best. This year, you can tell he's a tremendous athlete. Most unbelievable arm I've ever seen. He flicks the ball, and it goes like 80 yards almost. It's unbelievable. But I don't think he's ever going to be a good quarterback. He's not accurate. I mean, one day I pulled up his stats, his whole career. He has like a 54% completion percentage. That's like third string right there. Tremendous running ability, tremendous arm, but he's not accurate. He makes mistakes. And I don't think he's a good leader. A defense with safeties and good defensive linemen that will not just rush blindly but contain him, are going to give him a lot of problems. I mean, that's where the Eagles beat him every time they played him.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't give away the secrets.
Yeah.
You never know who's listening. No. But getting back to boxing, MMA, before we close out here in the next 20 minutes, I did want to mention we had a good Ultimate Fighter episode this last week, and guess who was a guest appearance? Mike Tyson. I know we talked a lot about him already tonight, but he showed up, and I guess he's a good friend of Dana White's, and they talk. So they got him to come in, and GSP actually asked for George St. Pierre, and he showed up to watch the fights, and there was a guy, Anthony Johnson, who was in the main fight of the show, and he fought a guy from Britain. I don't even remember the guy's name. But it was a slugfest. They were kicking each other, punching each other, and it went the full two rounds, and they said, all right, sudden death third round. And I picked the winner. It's kind of funny, the guy Johnson looks at Tyson right before the third round starts, and then he just comes out and he just unloads just unbelievable punches all over the place on this guy. And then I think there was even a knee or a kick. Ended up on the ground on top of the guy, and then he ended up getting a choke. And he was getting his butt kicked before that. He came out too strong. He got winded. The other guy caught up to him. It was probably the best fight I've seen on that show so far. Mike Tyson picked a good day to come in and watch. That's a good show, and they had the big UFC this past weekend. It was pretty good. I think there's another one coming up in the middle of August. I mean, October 16th for free and Spike. And that's about it. Until next week, I think we're going to have to be signing out here in the next 30 seconds or so.
This is your boy, the Tornado, and I am out.
Good night, folks.